Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. This is Sonia.
My name is Willie Simpson.
And today we're talking about Season 3, Episode 2, Out of the Past, Part 2.
The 28th episode overall, correct?
I suppose so. So, this episode picks up from Season 3, Episode 1
right.
of this series, which was not the best episode in the X-Men Task series, but I think Episode 2 gets significantly better.
You know, it's funny. We do this show one episode at a time. Sometimes I've thought to myself, oh, maybe we should do, like, if it's a two-part series, maybe we should just throw them all together as one.
Yeah.
But I like that we do one episode at a time for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
This one might have been better if we did it, like, all as one, though.
Well.
Because, well, no. I
what's done is done.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, there's no going back on that. But my point about that is that the first episode is a nice build-up for the second one.
Mm-hmm.
And the second one's way better than the first one. So, of a total piece, episode 2 redeems episode 1.
Yeah.
So, and I remember viewing it that way as a kid as well. That
well, yeah, that's how it aired on TV.
Right, I know, but I'm just saying in general, like, I really was excited by episode 2.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, and speaking of episode 1, let's recap it a little bit,
mm-hmm.
In case you're dropping in here. Basically, the Morlocks are back. They stole something from a group of Australian cyborgs called the Reavers, who are led by a Japanese woman named Yuriko, who has since renamed herself Lady Deathstrike.
Who is a lost love of Wolverine when he used to live in Japan.
And she's out. She's also consequently out for revenge on Wolverine because he inadvertently killed her father.
And now she's got adamantium steel claws as her fingers.
Right, and it's worth mentioning that her father was the one that captured Wolverine and gave him his adamantium skeleton.
Right.
So,
anyways, wow, this is quite the sci-fi soap opera. So the Morlocks had got, like, this spaceship thing, like, that are down in the tunnels where they live.
Underneath New York City. So, Lady Deathstrike is after the Morlocks. Well, they had the thing originally. The Morlocks stole it from them. But Lady Deathstrike thinks that with this spaceship thing, she's going to get rich or get access to a tremendous amount of power or something. But no,
so, we leave off episode 1 where she and Wolverine have been, like, slashing at the outside of this spaceship for some reason.
Right, like, Wolverine and Gambit and Jubilee get involved, and they all tangle with these Reavers and Lady Deathstrike in the subway tunnels.
Right.
Which leads them to the spaceship, and, yeah, right, like you said, Wolverine and Lady Deathstrike were slashing at the spaceship, opening it up, and out emerged some big, like, green monster thing.
There you go, our whole last podcast episode. What took us 30 minutes to talk about last time or whatever?
I don't know.
There you go, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, so this episode opens. The green glowing monster thing is loose. Professor X is quite concerned. He's been monitoring the situation with his Cerebro helmet. Quite alarmingly, he's screaming a lot and freaking out every time he makes contact. So he's very emotionally disturbed by this. And so sort of right away, this monster thing is attacking the X-Men and the Reavers. Right away, the Reavers get their souls sucked by this thing. So it's a big, like, green energy blob.
I really like the way it's rendered, because it's like it's transparent
It's straight out of a neon 1980s computer.
Yeah, it's like, but then, like, its highlights or whatever are the only thing that you see on it, and it's like a highlighter green sort of color. It's cool because when you first see it, or to me anyway, I remember when I was a kid thinking that it was like translucent or like transparent mostly, so you could go right through it and like it wouldn't harm you and you wouldn't harm, like, a ghost sort of Casper situation. But then you quickly realize as the episode unfolds that that's not the case at all. It's like a solid being. It's just looks cool.
And it's got a cool name too. It's revealed later in the episode, but let's just say now it's what's known as a spirit drinker.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like a good name for a band, anyone out there. The Spirit Drinkers.
Hmm.
Yeah, so it drinks people's spirits. So it's got these green glowing tentacles that if they touch you, it'll suck out your soul.
They become red glowing tentacles and suck your soul.
And so Jubilee and the Reavers get their souls sucked first. Actually, Jubilee sacrifices herself to save Gambit at one point. And so what happens is once your soul gets sucked...
Wait, the Reavers or the Morlocks?
Well, the Morlocks in a little bit, later, but the Reavers at first. No, that's okay.
I ruined it.
So, yeah. How dare you spoil that plot point. So Jubilee gets her soul sucked, and what's left of Jubilee is she's a limp body. Lady Deathstrike later refers to Jubilee as a whelp, which was funny.
What is a whelp? Is that like a small... that's like a sea creature, isn't it?
Is it? I thought it's just like an old English expression meaning like a young, useless young person.
Oh. Why am I picturing like barnacle creatures?
An annoying, young, useless web young person.
Whatever.
Yeah, well, I don't know. So Jubilee, her soul sucked, and so what's left of her whelpish body is...
Oh, maybe I'm thinking of a whelk? Is that a thing?
I don't know. A whelk. Sorry. I've never heard that word before in my life.
I'm derailing us. Go on.
That's okay. So her body is limp and lifeless, with the exception of her eyeballs, which are bright neon green, glowing, which is pretty disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
This whole episode reminds me of like a really good Ghostbusters plot.
Yeah.
Almost like the Ghostbusters cartoon of the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big, scary monster that's got really terrifying powers. And maybe that neon green color, the color of that neon green slime.
Yeah, Slimer.
Yeah, and it's going on in New York City in the subway tunnel, the spooky subway tunnels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's attacking both heroes and villains. And the big fear of this episode is Wolverine and Gambit are really concerned. They do not want this thing to escape to the surface. Because it's going to have 8 million souls to drink from.
Right. Well, that's fear one. Fear two is that periodically the face of the monster kind of like swirls up into the face of...
Jubilee
or like one of the other people whose souls have already been drunk.
Right.
And you see like their soul, I guess, in there being like, help me.
Yeah.
Or like something
I'm
like
still
that.
Inside.
So that's another like... tricky thing for them to figure out, because how are they going to destroy this monster without destroying the souls of the
and
people that
it's
are
also,
inside?
It's a nice tip to Wolverine and Gambit that Jubilee's still alive.
Mm-hmm.
That she's not dead.
Right.
So this is quite quite the sticky situation, as Gambit would like to say. Professor X is monitoring all this, like we said, and he sends out the psychic alarm first to Beast, who is in some museum somewhere. And he's wearing a full men's suit.
Yeah.
A brown
and
men's suit.
And shoes and everything.
Big clompy shoes.
Yeah.
To cover his enormous feet. And it's a couple of moments of comedy in there. It's actually pretty funny.
He's really commenting on like...
the art.
Abstract modern paintings and stuff like
that. Yeah, like, the people around him are pretty terrified of him being there.
He's really talking to, like, this one woman. It's
a super fancy lady.
I can't tell if he knew her because he, like, holds her hand or something at some point. I'm like, is this his date? She looks terrified.
I think he's just kind of accosted a random museum goer and is giving her a free tour.
Oh.
Just because I think... You know what it is? It's okay, this is what's going on with Beast. He's out and about in the museum. He sees that people are terrified of him. There's nothing he can do about it. He's just surrounded by all this fear and bigotry, right? So he, in a weird punkish move, he's just like, I'm going to be completely sort of ostentatious and just... speak my beautiful art criticism thoughts out loud
and
to whoever's
be
around me.
Everything that these people don't expect him to be.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah, because he is the center of attention.
Right.
So he's like trying to subvert it.
Right. And not be like a big scary monster like people expect, but just like a gregarious intellectual.
Right. But in a weird way, he's accosting this woman who is really afraid of him and trying to like explain to her the beauty of Matisse or something.
Yeah.
And it's funny. And it's, you know, and it's... It's a nice, it's a really nice scene now that I'm talking it out loud. I thought it was kind of stupid, and my first instinct was to say Beast is an asshole.
Really? I thought it was pretty cool, because it shows him, like, we see a lot of scenes, actually, of Beast in his daily life. You really get this sense of Beast, like,
yeah.
You know, you see him in other episodes as, like, a doctor with his patients and, like, doing lab experiments. Like, right. He's not at the X-Mansion all the time, like,
no,
the
rest not. Of those losers. He's got a full life. Well, no, let's talk about who are the biggest losers in the X-Mansion. So Beast has a very active outside X-Men life. First of all, he's been to prison for a while, so he right. was there. He's had life
he's
in
really
the clink.
Had some experience.
Yeah, he's had to right. He's had to testify before Congress after helping. No, he didn't rescue the president. The other X-Men did.
Yeah.
But he's friends with the president of the United States, Senator Bob Jeff Kelly. He's a doctor. He's an experimental surgeon.
Yeah.
Right. So he's, like, really out and about. And he sees culture and stuff, you know, in New York City. And it's kind of – but it's sad, though. I mean, speaking to my point, it's sad that he's – theoretically, New York is the one place on Earth where, you know, anyone might be – any weird person might be accepted.
Okay.
You know, right? That's, like, traditionally the rap New York has.
But he is by his community.
By the mutant community, which yeah. is small in this series.
Right.
But I'm just saying that even in New York, he's people fear him. And he's pretty famous.
Okay, fine. But, like, that's not to say that New York is a perfect place, right?
Right,
you take,
it's not.
Like, some, like, punk teenager with, like, a pink mohawk and put them in, like, stuffy upper crust museums on, like, the upper west
this,
side
This
or
was
whatever.
A classic thing that it's happened like, in the early 80s, by
yeah,
the way.
Yeah, right, exactly. It's like they got, you know, a similar reaction yeah. that Beast is getting in this museum.
Right, but the difference is a punk, and not to denigrate punks, but they can control their appearance. Well, they might argue, no, this is who I am.
Yeah.
But Beast is really can't. Beast is who he is.
Uh-huh.
He can't change his makeup or something.
Right.
I mean, it's a racial allegory, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, biggest losers in the X-Mansion. So Beast clearly not a loser.
No, but you know who is?
Who?
Scott and Jean.
No.
What?
I'm totally disagreeing. This episode presents contrary evidence.
Oh, actually, you're right, yeah. That's
true. And this isn't the first time.
They do other stuff, too, yeah.
Yeah, they go out on dates in the city a lot. And in this episode, they go to a nice little bistro.
Right, they're sitting at some, like, sidewalk cafe.
They know the owner. His name is Sydney.
Uh-huh.
They're having a really romantic time until they're interrupted by Professor X. And that's another really funny scene. This episode's really funny. It's really well written.
Well, okay, but to go back to the art museum. Wait.
It's like a nice slice of life episode.
Sorry, go ahead. Who are you going to say is the biggest
loser? No, I don't know. I haven't even thought about it yet. I'm trying to figure it out
logically. I'm trying to think of, like, who do you never see leave the X-Mansion?
Jubilee leaves it a lot. She tries to get out. She's always skateboarding around Westchester.
Uh-huh.
And trying to... Anytime... She hates being stuck at the X-Mansion.
Yeah.
So even if she... You know, because she's a kid, she doesn't get to go out that much, she's not a loser. She's got a lot of... She's got a real...
Let me just be clear that when I said that, I was totally just... It was in jest.
Right, I know.
But anyway.
I just want to see who would be the biggest loser. All right, so...
Professor X himself?
Well...
But I feel like that's not fair, because...
No, I think he might... He's a strong candidate.
he's wheelchair-bound, so that makes it a
but
little
that
bit more difficult
He's in
for
a
him.
Floating chair.
That's true. But also, it's his mansion, so if anyone's going to stay there... It's him.
It's his house. Yeah. It's his house more than anyone else's house. All right. And then Wolverine.
Storm and Rogue go out all the time.
Yeah. And they go off on their own mini adventures sometimes, too.
Yeah.
They like to, you know. And
so does Gambit.
Yeah. Maybe they're not all losers. They really do. They're all cool. We're the losers for watching them.
And staying home recording podcasts about them.
Yeah. They're out living their lives, being superheroes, wearing amazing clothing.
well, we can't all be that.
No, I guess not.
Fantastic.
Right. So,
Beast is in this museum and he's like chatting to this woman that doesn't really want to talk to him. And then out of nowhere, you see Professor X's like floating head come and like, what does he say? He's like, Beast, you're needed right away.
Yeah.
Professor? He like stops mid-sentence about like Picasso or something. He's like, Professor?
Yeah, which makes Beast and, seem like, even more insane to these people. If everyone else can see the floating head, then, you know.
No, I don't think so.
No, I don't think
it's
so
a mental projection, right?
And also, Professor X wants to keep his communique secret. He doesn't want to alarm the public.
Yeah, that's true.
By
that
being
would be
a floating
quite alarming
head.
To the public.
Yeah.
So then Beast realizes he's needed, and he, like, flips right out of his shoes. And, like...
He just leaps towards the museum ceiling or something.
And then we see, like, a little repeat of that incident. Scott and Jean in their, like, romantic date outside at this table.
Yeah.
And
this is the second time we've seen them on a romantic date in New York City, and the second time in the romantic date they've had to go underground into the smelly New York City sewers.
Bummer.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Because that happened in the original Morlocks episode in season one.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, they have a lot of trouble going on dates, which they talk about.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're having a conversation where they're like, finally, it's just the two of
us. Yeah, we got away from Mr. Sinister. I didn't think we would there.
Alone at last. And then, like, the mental projection comes up right between the two of them. Professor X being like, Scott and Jean, you're needed right away.
He has no boundaries, Professor X.
Yeah, well.
Yeah. Well, it's an emergency. It's an emergency. Right. I mean, but, you know, they're the X-Men. And then as this, you know, back underground, this sewer monster thing is sort of, it's melting through the subway and sewer walls. And then you see the Morlocks who have been imprisoned by the Reavers.
Right. And they're in those, like, glowing net.
Yeah, that the Reavers shot at them. And they're, tunnel wall. But the thing is, before they were unconscious, and now it seems like they've woken up. And they've woken up just in time to see their souls being horribly sucked away by an interstellar space creature. So the Morlocks really have a sad, sorry time in this episode.
Mm-hmm. In most episodes.
Right, yeah, that's true. And then, so, you know, Wolverine, Gambit, and Yuriko, or Lady Deathstrike, they're trying to figure out what to do. Gambit and Wolverine want to save the day somehow. They realize this thing's a big threat. It could get to the surface and, you know, kill all of New York City. But Lady Deathstrike is sort of just taunting Wolverine over every little, like, thought he's trying to have to try to fix the situation. She's saying, it's like, what, you want to protect these people? You're a mutant. They hate you. They think you're ugly. Yeah. and he just looks at her and he's like, it's my life. You know, like, she asks him why he's doing this, why he would sacrifice himself.
Right.
And that's another nice character moment from Wolverine.
It just seems weird that Lady Deathstrike would be, like, a proponent of that type of thinking. You know what I mean? Because, like, she is not a mutant. She looks like a mutant
by choice. Yeah, she looks horrible. She looks worse than anyone.
Right. And here she is, like, I don't know.
She's being real completely... you're right. I'm not sure. She's just a villain.
Yeah, but it's like a moment for them to reveal Logan's, like, commitment to humanity.
Right. Even if they, and Wolverine keeps trying to reason with her too. He's, you know, he's got Jubilee's limp body in his arms. He's like, "This is your revenge, Yuriko. Yeah. Are you satisfied?" And she's like, "No, not really." Right, and then, you know, this beast keeps attacking them, and, you know, Wolverine can hurt it, he discovers, by slicing its tentacles, and Lady Deathstrike can do the same. And and Wolverine tries to make Lady Deathstrike feel bad about the Reavers. He says, what about your men? Or Gambit actually is the one that says it. What about your men, Cher? It's like, are their lives worth sacrifice too? And she says, they knew the risks. And then, but it's at that moment the monster comes back and you see her men trapped.
Yeah.
And like, Lady Deathstrike, help us. Don't leave us behind. They're Australian. And then you see the pang of guilt she feels. She's got an icy heart, that Yuriko.
Apparently so.
Right.
It turned to ice when Wolverine left her.
And it's at this moment, too, where Gambit thinks, he's like, I'm going to save the day. And he just starts throwing more cards at the beast.
Right.
Which is funny. And Wolverine stops him. He's like, no, you can't.
Wait, why? What happened?
I don't know.
Because of the souls on the inside?
Yeah, but
is that why?
I guess he doesn't know. He thinks that we can't hurt it.
Mm.
Now, at this point... The New York subway system is getting quite destroyed.
Right.
The infrastructure below ground is taking quite the hit. And if you know anything about the subways these days, that's going to cause years of delays. I mean,
it's bad enough as it is.
Yeah, ever since Hurricane Sandy and other various budget cuts, the New York City subway system has slowly degraded to the point of almost, like, every other day, it's non-functioning for millions of people commuting in the city.
Yeah.
Take it from us, we know.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine, like, a whole monster, like, destroying huge sections of it.
Yeah.
That is not going to be a quick fix. That's going to really put a crimp in people trying to get to work. And, you know, they keep trying to fight this thing. And Yoriko at one point says, we're trapped, Logan. And he says, I'm never trapped. And I like that line from Wolverine. That's a really great Wolverine moment.
What a Canadian
moment.
Response.
What a Canadian. Is that what Canadians say whenever they're threatened?
I don't know.
America's invading Canada for some reason. And they're like, we got you now. And they're like, nope, Canada's huge. We're never trapped. And they just run into the snow. Yeah, you're right. That's a full-on Canadian expression.
See?
And then, so it's at this moment that Professor X, Beast, Cyclops, and Jean meet Gambit and Wolverine in the tunnels. Oh, Lady Deathstrike gets her soul sucked as well.
Right.
And,
through her foot. So weird.
Yeah.
You see the tentacle, like...
Well, why? Why is that weird?
Into her foot. I don't know, because with the Morlocks, the tentacles were, like, going into the heart or something,
oh, yeah.
Which, like, symbolically makes a little more sense.
Right. Well...
Whatever. Anyway...
Yeah, and there's a funny little moment where Professor X already has Jubilee on his floating golden chair,
mm-hmm.
and then Wolverine puts Lady Deathstrike on there, too, and then his chair visibly...
like dips. Yeah, I noticed that, too.
And we've talked about in the other episode that there was animation errors or production errors with this one. Someone on Facebook pointed out to us it wasn't so much an animation error, it's that they had to outsource some of this animation to a different studio. So that's why it looks a little different than other episodes. The inking more dramatic,
yeah,
to say the least.
Higher contrast, higher saturation.
Yeah. And in a lot of ways, it works better in this episode than in the previous one, because there's a lot of glowing green nonsense from that monster.
Yeah.
So the dramatic lighting is necessary, and it's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
But when Cyclops and Jean come, their costumes, which are traditionally sort of like bluish, are almost like pitch black.
Mm-hmm.
Which doesn't look so bad, but it's just noticeably different.
Yeah, it ups the drama factor.
Yeah, the drama is really high. How do I explain this? There's a Japanese anime intro for this show.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it? Have I shown that to you?
I don't know.
Okay, so on YouTube, we'll look at it later. But basically, they aired the show in Japan, too. But for whatever reason, the mm-hmm. Japanese had a different introduction.
Oh, yeah. I have seen it.
Oh, yeah,
that.
Watched that.
Yeah.
And it's so badass.
Mm-hmm.
The animation is crazy. It's way more stylized. And a lot more, like, hyper-extreme. I don't know how else to describe it.
Yeah.
But this episode looks more like the Japanese intro than any other episode.
Mm.
Especially when they have all these close-ups on Wolverine's face.
Right.
You really see all the crinkly details of his face and a lot of extreme close-ups. And certain shots of Cyclops, too, when he's blasting with his eye beams. They have, like, a really dramatic close-up.
Mm-hmm.
So the action is kind of really well done in this episode. I like the way it looks.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. So anyway, Beast and Professor X decide to go deeper into the tunnels to check out the spacecraft, the crashed interstellar ship, to get more information. And Cyclops, Jean, Gambit, and Wolverine, their goal is to keep the monster at bay
right.
from reaching the surface.
They're going monster hunting.
Right. And, Professor X has been acting weird in these two episodes. He keeps... Well, for one thing, he's been shrieking a lot every time he tries to scan this alien or see what's going on.
Uh-huh.
And he's also getting weird, strange messages from the spaceship, too.
Right. Well, he goes over with Wolverine, and there's that alien writing on the side of the ship.
Yeah.
And... No, not with Wolverine. With Beast. And he just, like, touches the plaque with the writing on it for a second, and it, like, electrocutes him, but
yeah.
Beast can tear him away, so,
right.
He, like, comes to really easily, and he's just, like, a little shaken, but he's fine. And then all of a sudden, he can read the alien writing
yeah.
without a problem,
yeah.
so he knows the sign on the outside of the ship said danger, and then he goes over to the computer and starts, like...
He really gets to town on an alien computer.
Punching away at it, and it's only in the alien language, but he's able to, like... decipher it somehow.
It's funny. It's nice to see Professor X on an actual mission.
Yeah.
And not incapacitated or kidnapped or something.
Mm-hmm.
He's out there, and you get to see the side of him that's really brilliant, that he's super smart and very... His brain... There's something about his brain powers that makes him a different kind of super genius than a regular super genius. You know what I mean?
Nope.
I mean, but the nature of his mutant powers, I feel he has access to all these like different like modes of thinking, perhaps.
Like a higher emotional intelligence or like empathy or something?
Well, that's part of it too. Like he first of all, his view on humanity is much different than anyone else's on Earth. It has to be. Mm-hmm. Because he can at times, you know, with Cerebro, you know,
like read, enter people's minds.
Yeah,
sort of.
And like read like mass minds of people, and he just has a very unique viewpoint, you know. He mm-hmm. he sees humanity in a way that no one else can really relate to. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess other psychics and telepaths like have it, but he's the most powerful. So, you know, there's that aspect. And there's and you would think that by having like this incredible access to people's minds, it naturally it lends to the science fiction thought that he, in some ways, may be downloading people's knowledge as well. Mm-hmm. And this is just what I've always thought about Professor X.
Okay.
And I think it's probably, like, it's bared out in comics and in shows and movies. But, like, this, I feel like this idea that he can, like, absorb knowledge in a way that others can't.
Right.
You know, and they show that in the movies that, you know, he gets his doctorate at, like, age 20 or something.
Right.
And you think that, you know, the only way he does that is because he can just learn so much quicker or intuitively than anyone else.
Right.
So I don't think it's I don't think he would be a super genius if he didn't have the powers, is my point. I think the powers have made him into like an incredible brain as well.
Okay.
So the point is, like, you see some of that here. Like, he's got like magical like deciphering ability, so he can go to an interstellar spacecraft and learn how to use its computer.
Oh, I thought it was because the spaceship had zapped him and it, like, did something weird to him.
It did, but I think that's still all connected with his brain and his brain energy.
So, like, if Beast had touched like if, it instead yeah. of him,
or
it
if me or you
had
touched it, we would have
died.
Died, or, right, I don't know what. We wouldn't understand. We wouldn't be able to, like, navigate the celestial, like, plane of our of the mindscape where this message would be communicated to us,
huh.
for lack of better words.
All right.
All right, so that's what. So Professor X, he's back in the action, which is good. Meanwhile, they're going monster hunting, and another great Wolverine line. You know, someone says, "Are we sure going the right way?" And Wolverine's like, "Yes, I'm sure. I can smell them."
Yeah.
And that, you know, Wolverine has said that before in other episodes, mm-hmm. actually many times now.
Yeah.
And I've noticed that every time he says it, he's always really angry.
Scent is a very powerful sense to
it
have.
It seems like this is a power of his that he hates having. Because he's always... A lot of the enemies he chases smell bad, and he says so.
Yeah.
Like, Sabretooth smells bad. Presumably, the Blob smells bad, although I don't think
that
he's
That
would
ever, make sense.
Right, yeah. I mean,
well, I mean, imagine having to smell something really terrible all the time, but
yeah.
you have to follow that scent to, like, to lead you to what you're looking for. That really sucks, you know?
I'm just... Yeah, it's revealing in his character, right? That he... It's no wonder he's so grouchy all the time.
I guess.
He's smelling, like, at a factor times a million.
Well, but also, how do you make that dramatic without giving him dialogue about it? You know, if you just show him, like, sniffing, it's, like, not really... It's not like a showcase of his power. You know what I mean?
Well, they do that. They do that too. So they mix it
yeah.
up sometimes. Sometimes
right.
he doesn't say, "I can smell it."
Right.
He just sniffs and you get the idea.
But they need to like remind the audience. I mean, partly
right.
because it's kids and partly
That's
because
true.
Like if it's a one-off and you don't know about Wolverine's smelling power. That,
but
like,
it's just, it's funny how he says it. He's not like, "Oh, I can smell him."
Yeah.
He's really angry about it, which
well,
makes you think that the odors are really foul and that this, you know, he's not happy that he can track things.
Or it could be that he's really angry because they're hunting this monster
yeah.
that has his friend's soul.
I like to think my way. Because it's every time.
Maybe it's compounded anger.
Right. Let's go. So the monster is really getting out of control. It's sort of breaking more towards the surface. People are in chaos in the subways. The monster knocks over a whole subway train, and people are spilling out and screaming. And that's what like made me think of it's like a low rent Ghostbusters episode.
Yeah.
And I think it's really cool. I love seeing chaos.
Why is it low rent?
It's not low rent. It's just that's not the right word. It's like just like a. What am I trying to say?
An homage or something?
No, I don't know about an homage. It's just reminiscent.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a minor adventure.
Uh-huh.
A minor Ghostbusters adventure. So, you know, it's at this point, and I want to talk more about that in a minute, but let's wrap up this episode. It's at this point that they're still attacking the monster. Wolverine realizes that when it touches the third rail...
Right, he, like, slices off a piece of tentacle, and it... like gets sizzled on the third rail and like disappears.
So this is what I thought the episode was all about when I was a kid. I thought this was a huge safety warning episode about not touching the third rail at a subway station.
Good advice.
It's great advice. It's like super dangerous. But the point is, it's like even an interstellar magical monster being is nothing compared still to the third rail.
Susceptible. You know what? I read that it's like a direct current in that third rail. It's like, I forget what it was. Like, really, like 1500 volts or something like that, you know?
Yeah. It's deadly.
Which, like, I didn't really remember this episode. Like, I didn't remember all the ins and outs of it. I haven't seen it since I was, you know, 8 or 10 or something. And, like, I thought that they were going to use the trope of, like, a subway coming along the tracks and, like, hitting it. Uh-huh. And then it disappears and they can't find it or something. I thought, like, a subway was going to come into play here. I really like this third rail idea. It's different. It's, like, not what I was expecting them to do.
It's just... it's just really funny to me. Am I the only one out there? You're going to think I'm weird for saying this. I've never told this to you. When I'm standing in a subway station, I just sometimes look at that third rail, and it's like covered in soot and dust, and it's just gross. Uh-huh. But I'm just always staring at it, thinking, like, that's instant death. That block of metal just, like, 10 feet away from me. Am I the only one that just blankly stares at it? Yeah. I don't know. I'm like, what if I throw something at it? Will it, like, disintegrate like in the X-Men?
That's
the
how tentacle? Track fires start.
Oh, you're right. That
don't
is.
Do it.
Yeah. You're right. Yes,
then you're going to be the reason that all those people can't ride the subway in the morning to work.
I am so anti-litter, so don't even, like, think to accuse me. I get angry. I get as angry as Wolverine when he smells things when I see people litter, especially in New York. I mean, come on. This is your fucking home, people.
Well, right. Not everyone's.
Well, yeah, I guess that's true. But still, whatever. Come on. Anyway, they discover that the third rail hurts the thing, so they get it to stand, like, over it, and Gambit throws his bow staff at it, and the bow staff lands directly on the third rail, kind of magnetically sticking to it, which I found bizarre.
I thought it was because it was pointy, so it, like, launches and, like, sticks in there.
It's got, like, a flat cylindrical surface, too.
I also didn't realize it was made of metal. I didn't know it was going to conduct electricity like that.
But. Well, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's been drawn differently. Sometimes it's metallic, and sometimes it's kind of, like, maybe it's purpley or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. But it retracts, so it would probably be metal, or at least plastic.
I guess I didn't really think about what it was. But
anyway, he throws a perfect, like, a javelin strike through the monster, which is weird, because sometimes the monster can be pushed back with physical force.
Yeah.
But this time the metal staff goes right through it, so it's weird. And it strikes the third rail, and the monster disintegrates, and all the souls, the people's heads go free, and they magically find where the people are, which is a nice, like, nice that happened.
Yeah.
Good luck. It's like, it'd be one thing, like, imagine if the souls just blasted out and didn't know where they were going.
Yeah, then you would have a Casper situation.
Yeah, you really would, right. You don't want those Casper situations. You know, Yuriko, she's not happy that Wolverine saved her life. And she sort of still vows revenge on him.
But she's going to leave him alone for the day.
Yeah, for the day.
Because, whatever, they've had enough.
Right. But it's at this point we get our first major, like, teaser in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not true, because they teased Mr. Sinister before, and they've teased, like, Magneto. They've, like, done some big teasers, but this is, like, the real, like...
It's a real blatant one.
Yeah, this is, like, the biggest one, where Professor X gathers the X-Men. He's trying to explain all this alien stuff happening, and he's like, you know, something I believe is about to happen that is going to change all our lives in a way that'll never be the same. A great power, a great force. You know, he's just sort of, like, going on about it. And then the camera dramatically rises up from where the X-Men are into outer space.
Mm-hmm.
You see planet Earth. And then an image of real fire, not animated fire, bursts on the surface of the Earth.
Nice special effect.
And it says, the Phoenix Saga, coming soon.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, dun. So that is... awesome. And so what I wanted to say from before, talking about the Ghostbusters, I think this is a great episode because it shows, like, how amazing the X-Men are.
Mm-hmm.
They're on this adventure fighting this interstellar space monster in the subways of New York. So it's a realistic setting, and it's a mixture of, like, you know, aliens have landed on Earth, like an alien monster kind of story, but, like, in a realistic setting, a real place. I'm being a little redundant now. And an exciting battle. Like, the stakes are really high. Like, New York City might get killed by this monster if the X-Men don't stop it. Mm-hmm. But that little story, which, imagine if it was filmed in real life cinematically, it would be pretty, like, amazing. Mm-hmm. That's a really action-packed, crazy adventure. You know, imagine how much it would cost to show the New York City subway system being destroyed by this green monster and people, like, thousands of extras fleeing in terror and stuff, and the X-Men being right in the middle of it. That's just but a little prelude to an epic X-Men story to come, mm-hmm. the Phoenix Saga. And that's what's so great about the X-Men. The stakes are constantly being raised. The threats are, they keep being trumped one after the other. Like, this threat was going to destroy New York City. The next threat threatens to destroy the universe or something, or the galaxy. So, and the X-Men are, like, you know, like I said, they're torn.
Seems like an exponential rise.
Yeah.
They could have done a few steps in between, but they really...
Yeah, but here they are. They're really earthbound. Yeah. You know what I mean? They're just trying to protect the subway system.
Right.
And now they're going to have to do God knows what. Well, if you're an X-Men fan and a fan of the show, you know what happens. But still, that's a good time to mention. I guess October is going to be the month of Phoenix.
How appropriate.
Why is that appropriate?
I don't know.
I was immediately trying to think, like, something with Halloween. Are you going as Phoenix for Halloween? Are you going to get your green spandex outfit?
I wasn't going to, but I guess now I have to, yeah. Now that I've said it.
Yeah, that'd be amazing cosplay. People would really want to see that on the internet. You have to see how cheap they run on Amazon.
Let me backtrack right now.
You're going to have to get real nice, like, golden boots and things.
Oh, God,
long golden
much.
Gloves.
I can't.
Would you rather be Dark Phoenix or Green Phoenix for Halloween?
Dark Phoenix for sure, but that's not October.
You'd have to dye your hair red, though, for Dark Phoenix.
Yeah.
You could get away with your brunette-ness. Well, actually, Jean Grey's always a redhead, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. The Dark Phoenix Saga. So the Phoenix Saga, I think it's going to be the next 4 or 5 episodes. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be some, like, 4 or 5 in between that, and then the Dark Phoenix is going to come after that one. So that'll probably be in, like, November, December. We'll get to Dark Phoenix.
Yeah.
So, you know, so although we thought last week Season 3 started off kind of weak, now Season 3 is starting off pretty awesome.
Yeah.
This episode redeemed the last one. And now we're diving right into the Phoenix Saga. Definitely some of the best episodes the show has ever produced.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best adaptations of the original Phoenix Saga from the comic book.
Yeah.
Written by Chris Claremont and his artists at the time. I forget if it was like Dave Cochran or somebody, like John Byrne or something. Brian, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. But great adaptation coming up. So very exciting X stuff, would you not say?
Extraordinarily exciting.
So, that's all I have for this episode. I think we've made our thoughts pretty clear. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
All right. So, it's at this point of the podcast, I'd like to just point out how you can get in touch with us and how you can help us personally if you enjoy what you've listened to. The first thing you can do is you can go on iTunes and rate us 5 stars and leave a nice review. That goes a long way to promoting our visibility. It's also really nice to read the messages. We got a really, really wonderful one from this guy. His name was like Logan X-Man or something. I apologize. His first part of his name is Logan, so I apologize, Logan. I'm guessing that's not his real name, but you never know. Maybe there's a fan of our show named Logan. That'd be pretty cool.
Hmm.
Anyway, he left us a really nice message, and it really made our day. So please leave it.
Thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks, Logan. Please leave us iTunes reviews. That really helps us. I mean, and like I said, I don't know if it affects if you use other podcast services. If you can leave reviews, that probably helps too. So whatever podcast service you use, a lot of people on Reddit are always asking me, like, oh, I don't have an Apple, or I hate using iTunes. I say just use your Android device. It's our podcast is everywhere.
Right.
You can find it on any podcast network, presumably. So you shouldn't have trouble finding us. Beyond that, follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson, and join our Facebook group, X-Men Task Podcast. You could talk to us directly. You could say hello. We're very nice. We always love hearing from our fans. They always help us out, fill in the gaps that we leave behind. Mm-hmm. And I have a feeling coming up with the Phoenix Saga, though I personally feel confident and well-versed in my Phoenix knowledge, I feel like a lot of fans are going to be yelling at me about the Phoenix Saga, and maybe you too, Sonia, so you have to be on your toes.
All right.
Oh, I saw, like, just randomly, another brief aside, some bonus content if you're still listening. On my phone, they're bringing Jean Grey back from the dead again in the comic book world. So, you know, I haven't been following all the comics, but I know that, I'm pretty sure Grant Morrison killed her again at some point. Jean Grey, she came back to life many times, you know.
Right.
And she became the Phoenix again, and she died again. And that led to Cyclops dating Emma Frost, the White Queen.
Right.
So I don't think Jean Grey's been back since then. Maybe she has. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong. But I saw a big splashy thing saying that Jean Grey is returning again as the Phoenix. She's being resurrected yet again.
So appropriate.
More perfect timing. And I guess that probably has a lot to do with the X-Men Dark Phoenix movie that's coming out next year.
Mm-hmm.
They probably want to do some kind of promotional tie into that, which I found bizarre because, you know, all accounts, Marvel, the company, is trying to not promote any Fox-related property at all, to the point of they got rid of the Fantastic Four, the comic book, I think. Someone can correct me if I'm wrong there. You know, they, like, do not want to do any, like, help Fox in any way with their promotions. And I read somewhere there's, like, some kind of rule that writers of X-Men now are not allowed to create new characters because they're afraid Fox will use them and make movies out of them.
Really?
Yeah, so they don't want to make another cool character for Fox to, like, create a whole new potential franchise out of.
Huh.
So, you know, it's kind of like a sad state of affairs with X-Men and in the Marvel universe. Another thing I posted, you know, Stan Lee, 94-year-old Stan Lee, I believe that's how old he is, he announced at some convention recently that he thinks that Disney is going to get the X-Men rights back soon. Maybe not soon, but he says one day, which I don't think...
That could be wild speculation
I think
on
that's,
his part.
I think so, but he would have insight, and he would be the kind of guy that would unapologetically just leak that if there is some sort of legal frontier work.
Or maybe he's like just putting it out there as like something that he hopes will happen, and then you're Stan Lee, if you just say something like that and
he's just wishing it into the universe,
right? Like maybe it'll just manifest because he's said the words.
I do think that it's a matter of inertia that Disney, this corporate behemoth, will somehow work out some deal with Fox one day to absorb their properties back. It'll probably be a thing when the superhero movie genre dies in such a way where people are just totally sick of it, that Fox is like, oh, this trend is over now. We're letting the rights lapse, and Disney just like quietly takes it back. And then, you know, another 15 years when they do these movies again, which they will, you know, assuming that the popularity dies down, like I think it will. It has to. People are already kind of sick of everything.
Right.
They'll come back. So I think in our lifetimes we will see the X-Men in the MCU.
Uh-huh.
And I think there's like been a lot of weird debate about, so many people are against it now. People have resigned to the fact that, one, they like that they're separated. They don't like that. They like the fact that X-Men is not part of the Marvel continuity. And they don't want to see it go back to Disney. And I've always been, like, pro-Marvel being all under one roof.
Yeah.
And I just think that's an interesting debate. Maybe we could talk about it more in the Facebook group or something. Like, I always thought, yeah, like, let Marvel control all their stuff. Like, they are doing such a great job.
Yeah.
Fox does a good job sometimes. They're hit or miss, right? So some X-Men movies are bad, some are good. You know, and we'll see. They've got a whole slate of new ones coming out, which is crazy.
Yeah.
The Dark Phoenix movie, Deadpool 2, X-Force,
right?
The New Mutants. I think they still want to do the Gambit movie. At some point, they'll have to get a new Wolverine actor in there, too, and bring him back.
Right.
So, I mean, Fox is not slowing down with this stuff. But anyway, yeah, let me know what you guys think about, if it's a good thing or a bad thing, X-Men potentially going back to their Marvel overlords at Disney.
Yeah.
So, anyway, that's just a little bonus content. I didn't mean to. Sonia always gets mad at me.
No, I don't.
You know? No, you're okay with this?
Yeah.
Okay, very good. All right. So, that's all I got to say. So, any last words, Sonia?
Bonsoir, mon ami.
Oh, I like that. Good night, everybody.